It's a great blessing to be here for Diane and I both to be back in many ways home, to see so many familiar faces and friends that I remember back in college days, to be able to also see graduates of Northland that are here furthering their studies and have settled into the Greenville area, and parents of present students that are now in training at Northland Baptist Bible College, and many of your young people who have worked at Northland Camp. In fact, Steve Pettit and Paul Witt are heading down, I think, in a couple weeks to recruit more of your young people to be able to serve in that capacity in Northland Camp. Sometimes you ask, what would cause a person to go to Dunbar, Wisconsin? And really, because it is on the way to nowhere. You could look, we'll stop by. People say, well, we'll stop by going where? Because there's really nothing else. You got some big lakes up there and the vast expanses of Canada. And it's a small place out in the middle of nowhere. It's beautiful. It's not a place where most of us ever would have chosen to take the next step. I was thinking after Colorado, then maybe Arizona or Maui or, something like that, but not Dunbar. And we look at our student body. We have a very narrow focus. We're ministry training, and we're not planning on expanding that to other studies. It is really about full-time vocational ministry training, and primarily in the area of pioneering missions, church planting. And I know sometimes parents get nervous about, if I send my son or daughter up to Northland, that's so far away. And probably they get in that environment and culture and that type of thinking. Next thing you know, they're going to be on some island in Micronesia. And you're right. You're right. And I say, yes. And this church is so missions-minded that they'll support that, and they will send you on a missions trip to see your grandkids. Isn't that exciting? So it all works out. And I think in this day and time with an American passport, and people say, well, how far away is Northland? It's about 3 hours. You think about that. I mean, about the time you take you to drive to Atlanta. Take an hour to fly to Detroit, an hour to fly to Green Bay, and then a little over an hour to drive up to Dunbar. And so it's not that far. And it's not that cold. Today. it's amazing how we talk about, it's hot and humid, or it's cold, or it's a dry heat, or there are hurricanes. But I know most of your young people are not going to determine God's will for their lives by those kinds of comforts, And when we went to Denver, Colorado in 1981, I really had no thought about the mountains and beautiful Colorado. I just knew that's where God called us. And when we went to, I used to do some grad work up at Northland. I'd land in Green Bay and drive up. And in the car, I said it every time I went up for class, why do people live up here? And yet now we love it. And I think the biggest part of why we love it is to be able to pour lives into the next generation. To me, it is the most exciting work in the world. And I'm very grateful for the opportunity to come down for Diane and I to speak at the family camp. That was really the ulterior motive, because our primary mission was, and I'm kind of embarrassed to say this, we had a young couple run away from home just this last week. And we came down to try to get them reconciled and bring them back home. And their names are Tim and Barb Corey. If you see them around. Now, we're still working to get them up there as often as possible. But we love the Coreys. And thank you for sharing them with Northland. And I know we'll still see them quite a bit. Well, if you have your Bibles, I'd like for you to turn to the Gospel of John, chapter 4. Gospel of John, chapter 4. What does authentic ministry look like? Most of us would say, well, it looks like this. And since I'm the only one that's really balanced and everyone else is either to the right or to the left, the way that I see it, the way I understand it, the way I experience it, this is really what Christ intended. But I start reading through many of his messages when Christ is speaking to his disciples and find that even though they think they understand what he's talking about and grasping it, they don't get it. And he's having to challenge them to open their eyes and to see something they're really not seeing. And in John chapter 4, we find that another example of this. For the woman of Samaria, he meets at the well. He is really saying to her to open her eyes and see something that she's not seen. The disciples track him down, and they're looking at ministry in a different way. This has really challenged me personally to step back and ask God to give me the mind of Christ when it comes to real, authentic ministry that Christ intended. It's a tremendous chapter. It's a long chapter, and I'm not going to read all of it, which I think I regret because it is so powerful and so moving. But I'd like to hit the beginning of this to lay the foundation. Most of you are probably familiar somewhat with John chapter 4, the woman at the well at Samaria, and the message that he has to his disciples. But let's begin with verse 3 of chapter 4, John. He left Judea and departed again to Galilee. But he needed to go through Samaria. So he came to a city of Samaria, which is called Sychar, near the plot of ground that Jacob gave to his son Joseph. Now Jacob's well was there. Jesus, therefore, being wearied from his journey, sat thus by the well. It was about the sixth hour. A woman of Samaria came to draw water. Jesus said to her, "Give me to drink." For his disciples had gone away into the city to buy food. Then the woman of Samaria said to him, "How is it that you, being a Jew, ask a drink from me, a Samaritan woman? For Jews have no dealings with Samaritans." Jesus answered and said to her, "If you knew the gift of God, and who it was who says to you, 'Give me a drink,' you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water." The woman said unto him, "Sir, you have nothing to draw with, and the well is deep. Where then do you get that living water?" I am convinced that as Christ is challenging us to understand and comprehend many truths about himself, and to understand and comprehend concepts of ministry, we often have another thought. And he is seeking to open our eyes to ministry. I think in many ways we have a spiritual blindness to what he is saying. And I'd like to show you several examples of this. First of all, in verses 3 and 4, I believe we are blinded by our pragmatism. Pragmatism is the way of thinking that if this works, we do it. And the reason I say this is because when our Lord left on his trip, if you look back to verse 3, and he left Judea and departed again to Galilee, it says he needed to go through Samaria. It was not the normal route. That is not the way any Jew would go. And if a group of people or an individual, and it really was the more simple way, but they would not go west along the Mediterranean. They would go east across the Jordan up into Galilee. And that is what made sense for them. That is what they were accustomed to. There would be absolutely no reason to go through Samaria. And I thought this, that a lot of times what is strategic ministry in God's eyes is not strategic ministry in our eyes. If someone were to ask me, talk about church planting. Well, first of all, we want to find a large city and go on the outskirts of that city where there is suburban growth, stable economy. The land is a little less expensive. You want to purchase land on the outskirts. You let the town build around it. You try to target the middle class to the middle upper class type of people. And we can go through all of the planning. And I'm not against a lot of planning. We talk about location, opportunities for church planting. But I think sometimes the Lord's plan for ministry is to a place that does not make sense. And the disciples weren't thinking that way. I don't think the church thinks that way today. This last year, I was invited to speak at a church in Medora, Kansas. Now, how many of you know where Medora, Kansas is? Is there anyone here who knows where Medora, Kansas is? It's like Dunbar. In fact, it's smaller than Dunbar. So I fly into Wichita, and we get in the car and drive. And finally, the youth pastor, who's a Northland grad, takes me into the town. And, I mean, there are about three or four buildings in the town. One of them is a school building. And it's boarded up. Now, have you heard about dying farming communities? They're all over the West. And I'm looking at this town, and I said, how many people live in this town? 47. I'm thinking, okay. And I start looking around, and this is all, my wheels are turning. I'm thinking, you know something? This is not a good place to start a church. I mean, why would anyone come here and start a church when you've got Chicago and New York City and Las Vegas and Denver, Colorado and Phoenix, Arizona, and you've got all of these places where you've got thousands and thousands of people? Why would anyone come to Medora, Kansas? And so we drive up to the church, and the building is kind of put together and still under construction. And on Sunday, there were over 400 people there. And my eyes are just kind of bugged out looking at all of these people. And people getting saved. Yes, farming people get saved. And all of these little towns and villages around, and people are coming to Christ, and the church is in the process of planting another church and another impossible little town. And you know what? I came away from that experience realizing this is a God thing. God is at work here. I think sometimes we are blinded by our pragmatic thinking and are not open that Jesus Christ went to many unlikely people and He went to many unlikely places to preach the gospel. To Samaria didn't make sense. Outside of the town did not make sense. Speaking to a woman did not make sense. Not in our pragmatic thinking. I believe we are blinded often by our pragmatism. I also believe we're blinded by our prejudice. If you look at verse 9 of chapter 4, the woman said to him, "How is it that you, being a Jew, ask a drink from me, a Samaritan woman? For the Jews have no dealings with the Samaritans." Look at verse 17. The woman answered and said, "I have no husband." Jesus said to her, "You have well said, I have no husband, for you have had five husbands, and the one you now have is not your husband, and that you spoke truly." Say, well, I'm not prejudiced. I think we're all prejudiced. We have a tendency to be attracted to ministry that's in our comfort zone, with people that we feel comfortable with. Now, I'm not just preaching to you. I'm talking about myself because I find this about myself. We gravitate to the upward mobile white collar suburbs that have a Starbucks on every corner. And we enjoy our lifestyle. The homes we live in, the clothes we wear, the cars we drive, and so we function in ministry to those kinds of people. Not Samaritan women who have a whole history of immorality. And I've watched this. Think, well, you know, it might soil us, or I'm not comfortable with that, and then I'm just not. And what happens is the longer we're away from our unsaved past, the more we are attracted to the comfort zones of ministry on our terms. We have a very comfortable ministry. And I've been around a lot of pastors who have gone out and planted a church and served the Lord there. And you know, we a lot of us look the same, and great families and growing. And all of a sudden, the city starts swelling and growing, and the neighborhood starts to change. And people start to panic. Because all of these nationalities are buying up all the homes around the church. And, you know, we don't say it out loud. Well, there goes the neighborhood. How are we going to... And you know what is happening is God is bringing the mission field to our doorstep, and we're ready to run and look for new property. I mean, I've watched this happen. And to my shame, I felt it. Because I'm being pressured out of my comfort zone. And I think, can we open our eyes to see that Jesus Christ in His ministry was consistently going to not the wealthy, but to who? Where would you find Him? The poor? The sinners? The Samaritans? Not in what we would say are the comfort zones or the strategic areas of ministry. And I think by this physical demonstration of His trip up through Samaria, He is saying to His disciples, open your eyes. Because they almost looked to Him in disgust. Even though they weren't going to open their mouths. What are you doing talking to this woman? Why are you here? But that was really the ministry of Christ. This last spring, my youngest son, Reed, and I were traveling to India, to the southern part of India. We went to through Bombay and then down to southern India and went to the very tip of India where the tsunami hit and where thousands of people lost their lives. And we just saw the devastation, the memorial that had been set up, and heard stories of that incredible wave of water that just covered that land. And there on the very tip of India was a temple, a Hindu temple, with all of their gods, not all of them, but many of their gods, just all over the place. And it reminded me of a Oriental Bible-type setting of when Jesus and the disciples would be going by the temple, because outside of the temple was just lined with beggars. With beggars. And I can tell you the truth that I felt here we are walking in as an Americans, and it's not real easy to hide that. And we're walking into the temple in our fine clothes and our passports and our money and our bag of souvenirs. And I'm worried about them pressing on me. Have you ever felt that? And begging money. In fact, even driving in Denver, when you pull off the interstate, downtown Denver, and you pull up to the stoplight, we'd often have people along the side of the road asking for money. Have you ever experienced that? I don't know if that's much in Greenville, but probably in Atlanta and other larger cities. But when we would drive off and come to a stoplight or even downtown, you'd have someone with their hand out. Beggars. And do you know what I wanted to say? The same thing you wanted to say. Why don't you get a job? And I remember one day thinking, what would Christ do? What would Christ do? You know, and we don't find that judgmental, condemning spirit about it. Why don't you get a job? Why don't you get a grip on life? Why don't you go out and be responsible with your life? We saw from Jesus Christ compassion for the poor. It marked his life. He was attracted to the poor. He was comfortable with the poor. And I started to think through this process, you know, I have become so uncomfortable around people who are sinners and people who are poor and people who need things. As we were walking out from this temple, this woman with a child in her hand, in her arm, came up to me and started pressing on me. And putting her hand to her mouth and saying, Ma, Ma, Ma. And then her hand to the mouth of her little boy. And we were waiting for a cab, and I'm wandering this way and wandering this way. And Reed and I are talking about, what do we do? You know, what do we do? I walk over here, and she's saying, you know, Ma, Ma. I'm going over here. And I'm rationalizing, you know, if I give her some money, she's going to want more money. If I give her some money, then all the rest of her are going to be on top of me. Yeah, this isn't going to be a good thing, and it's really not going to help them. And you know what? I kept on justifying and my rationalizing all of my thinking. You know something? What would Christ have done? What would Christ have done? I know He would stop, He would value that person, and He would minister to that need. And I finally gave her something before we left. And Reed said to me, he said, Dad, why'd you give her something? And we had a long, long talk about that. But it wasn't to me, oh, this is a great opportunity to teach my son about something. It was a very humbling time in my life. Because I thought, you know what? I can leave America, hop on the plane, fly through Amsterdam, and show my passport, go into Bombay, see all the sights of the lame and the lepers and the poor people and the beggars and all of that. And, you know, I can jump into that culture, you know, kind of minister for a while and catch my air again, go back home. And I thought that very few would actually go and live in the midst of that like an Amy Carmichael. Even in this city, I think we're that way. Even in our places in America, we have become very, very prejudiced. We're not comfortable. And so let's do ministry on our terms within these confinements. And I think what Christ is saying, open your eyes. Open your eyes. You're blinded by your prejudice. I also believe we're blinded by our plans. Verse 27. At this point, his disciples came and they marveled that he talked with a woman. Yet no one said, what do you seek or why are you talking with her? The woman then left her water pot, went her way to the city and said to the men, come and see a man who told me all things that I ever did. Could this be the Christ? You see, I think that the way that we're wired today is we have a plan, and our plan is to get from point A, that's where I am today, to point B, that's where I need to be. You know what, I applaud goal setting. I think goal setting is very helpful, but sometimes we can be at point A, and I say, you know what, our ministry goal. And we function this way. We function this way in our churches. We have ministry goals. So our goal this year is to go from here to here. To be. The problem is that all along the way to be are disruptions. And every disruption can be a ministry opportunity. You watch the way Christ lived. It wasn't like he was so, you know, looking at his watch and saying, okay, I've got to get over here. We've got to hurry and like this. But I find myself that I can on a Sunday morning walk from my car and go all the way up to the pulpit and have needs in the church all around me like this. I'm going up to the pulpit to preach the message to these people and walk by people who are screaming out with needs. I think we go through society this way. We go to our jobs this way. We live our lives this way. The quietness of our homes. We make our plans. We work our plans. We're on our agendas. We're flashing by. We don't even see the lame, the sick, the poor. And those many, many opportunities. These disciples, to me, were incredibly ambitious. We find them arguing about who's the greatest, getting things done, getting food to eat, getting to the next place. But Jesus Christ is sensitive all along the way to the needs around him. You know, I think sometimes we model a good Christian spirit when we're in church, but not at the checkout counter at the grocery store, or in the middle of traffic, or to a salesperson who is rude. Every time we take a step through life, there is ministry opportunity. But we're blinded by our plans. And then we're blinded by our physical desires. It's interesting, and on two counts with this, physical desires, is that when Jesus talked about water, was he talking about physical or spiritual? Both, really, wasn't he? He's asking her for... He said, that's not a fair question. He's asking her for water because he was thirsty and he was weary. But he was making a point to drive home spiritual truth. But what she was understanding was completely physical. She was looking in those terms. We find when the disciples come and they meet up with Christ, and they're concerned about him getting something to eat, and he says to them, I have meat to eat that you know not of. What are they thinking? Has he got something else around here? They're looking around. He must have something else to eat. Today, I think that we view ministry in terms of the physical, not the spiritual. And Christ is saying, open your eyes to what I'm talking about. It's not just this water to drink. It is life eternal. Open your eyes, disciples. It's not so important about the food that I'm eating to nourish my body, but my food is to do the will of him that sent me. That is my primary purpose. And I think you say, well, we live in a real world. Well, we do. Everything is physical. Everything is temporal. But I think sometimes we function in concepts of programs and ideas and getting things done and accomplishing tasks. And we really do not view ministry with a spiritual perspective. You know, it changes the way you evaluate life. It changes the way you look at earthly treasures. It changes everything when you view through a spiritual lens. The disease you heard about, the sickness, the problems, the difficulties, the heartaches, when you view it with an eternal perspective. And see, Christ was always looking, when it came to ministry, he was looking in terms of eternity. And that's why it didn't matter so much to him to not have a home. I don't even picture him carrying a backpack. Do you? You think, well, you know, all this, let's follow Christ and I want to follow him and you just want to be disciples of Jesus Christ. But you know what? He didn't take anything with him. He had a home. Didn't have a donkey, his own donkey to ride around on. I mean, he said, foxes have holes, birds have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. It's almost this, though, that for us to be able to be successful and to function in ministry today, we've got to have a lot of stuff. But Jesus Christ functioned without that stuff. And I think that if you were to put him into this present day society, I think he might feel a bit uncomfortable in a lot of our churches. He'd look out and say, "Where are the poor? Where are the other races, peoples? Where are the sinners?" I really do. I think there would be a measure of discomfort. And then I think we're blinded by our own personal productivity. If you look at verse 39, "And many of the Samaritans of that city believed in him because of the word of the woman who testified, 'He told me all that I ever did.'" What is success? Is success getting the building up? Running the program? How do we define success? And I think that what Christ was saying to these disciples, when they talk about water, they talk about food to eat, we're talking about what are we doing in Samaria, what are you doing talking to this woman, that there is a supernatural spiritual work that he is doing that they're still not seeing. It's not harvest time. And he challenges them. To me, the most familiar verse that we read, verses 34 and 35, it says, "Jesus said to them, 'My food is to do the will of him who sent me and to finish his work.'" And basically what he's saying is the will of God was to go to Samaria to speak to this woman who was such a wicked sinner. That is what he is to do. That is ministry. And then he says, Do you not say, there are still 4 months and then comes the harvest? Behold, I say to you, lift up your eyes and look at the fields, for they are already white for harvest." Here's the picture that I think is taking place. He is talking to them. You're talking about being in Samaria, being at this well, talking to this woman, being out of place, talking about water, talking about food. "My meat is to do the will of him that sent me." And he says to them, really, lift up your eyes. Look. Open your eyes. You're not seeing it. And I think that what many commentators believe is happening, this is not anywhere near. We've got 4 months before a harvest is coming. There's not the whiteness and the ripeness in the fields. But they are looking at the city, and over the hill are all of these men coming in their white robes. In fact, that the word white is used to describe a white garment. And this mass of people are coming. And they come to salvation. Isn't that exciting? I mean, out in the middle of nowhere. It's like a Medora, Kansas. And he stayed there for 2 days. There's a great impact. You know, I remember hearing a story from a missionary. The man was in his 80s. He was up at Northland at our missions conference. By the way, that's the most exciting time of the year. If you want to come to Northland, missions conference is just, it is an incredible week. And we'll have about 100 different missions agencies there recruiting students to go to the mission field. And one of these retired missionaries, had been in Africa most of his life, in his 80s, pulled me aside and told me this story. He said, "I was with this young man, and our plan was to go from one city to another city to start a work." And he said, "Along the way, our vehicle broke down." And, I mean, there are no parts stores in a lot of parts of Africa. And our vehicle broke down, and all of a sudden this young man said, "Oh, I can't believe this. Who are we going to turn to?" And he said, and everything was negative because we weren't getting from here to our objective to start this ministry in the city. And where they were on the road, they looked off and they saw three little huts. And the older missionary said to the younger missionary, you know something? God has something for us here. He understood that. He had spiritual eyes. Out in the middle of nowhere, three little huts. Well, they were there for a very long time. Because they couldn't get the vehicle fixed. But all of a sudden, some of those village people started coming to Christ. Getting saved. And going out, inviting others. And pretty soon, there were literally hundreds and hundreds of people that came to Christ in that spot. And they never made it to the big city. And I thought, isn't that the way God works? But see, we still tend to plan it like you would starting a McDonald's or running a corporate America or in our comfort zones, moving along this way. And what Christ is saying about real, authentic ministry is open your eyes to the spiritual sight of that one decrepit, lost, begging soul that needs salvation. That's ministry. I tell you what, you don't need to go to Africa or to Bombay to find that. You find it here in this city. And I tell you, as I went through this passage this last year, it just ripped me up because I thought, you know what? I've kind of retreated to my comfort of ministry. And you say, well, God's doing a lot of things. But I think in many ways we've neglected the heart of Jesus. To the poor, to the sick, the lepers, the beggars. So I come away from this thinking the Lord is saying to me, Matt, open your eyes. Open your eyes to the ministry.